But first of all, I wanted to thank everyone for their prayers, for the success of the travels. It was successful, and we were able to visit all three of the congregations that we have in Kenya. And everything did go very well, with no issues really to speak of. So I must admit that okay, so when I first got there, I flew into Nairobi. And, you know, I had been, Tim Waddle, most of you all know Tim Waddle. He is a senior pastor over there, and he was very kind and very patient with me as I was learning the ropes. But when I flew into Nairobi and I got off the aircraft, I thought, I needed a long sleeve shirt. I thought, if this is African weather, I mean, this is all right. He thinks this is hot. That next morning I had breakfast. It was 53 degrees and dry because it's 6,000 feet. You don't have humidity, so the air was very dry. Got up to like 75 that day. It was a spectacular day. He says, don't get used to it. This is Nairobi. He goes, where we're going, it'll be much warmer. And it was. Whenever we got off the plane in Kisumu, which is down at sea level, you could cut the air and just kind of wade on through. But it sure did get warm. But God truly blessed all that went on. We were very busy each and every day that we were there. We had to make the best of the time that we had because there were a lot of things to do, busy schedule, and a lot of people to meet with, and a lot to get accomplished because not only did we meet with the congregations, we also were getting things set up and finalized for the Feast of Tabernacles, and which is going to make our responsibility over there much easier whenever we arrive here in just the next, less than a week. So we did take a couple days, just 2 days out of that to recharge, and I'm glad that we did. We needed it. I wouldn't call it recharging. We were traveling and things like that, but it was kind of a relaxing of the mind, which is nice. So all in all, the trip was a success. So this afternoon, I'd like to introduce you to the congregations in Ochuna. And you'll notice in Ochuna, Migori, and Gakachola. And as I told everybody in Henderson, every time I say Gakachola, I think of Coca-Cola. I don't know why, but I don't know how many thought that as soon as I said it. First thing that comes to your mind. But anyhow, I would like to introduce you to them. But you'll notice, I guess for the first few days, I was very intent on learning and kind of trying to pick everything up, and I didn't have my phone out of my pocket very much to take pictures. Well, so with Ochuna and Migori, the congregations there, I only got a limited number of pictures, and I kind of kicked myself for doing that. But Gakachola, I got so many. But anyway, it was you'll notice as we go along that I have more pictures of one than the other two. But hopefully at the feast, I'll be able to take more time. We'll have more time with them and take some more pictures, maybe break them up in families. And that way you can kind of get to know all of them a little bit better, at least through pictures. Who knows? One day you just may want to go over there. So and then you'll know names. So anyhow, so first of all, we visited Ochuna and Migori the first Sabbath. And this was this is what it looked like as we were driving up into Ochuna. As you'll notice, you'll see the little houses. That's what those are. Those are houses, small houses. As you'll notice that most of them have white-looking roofs. Well, the reason that they're white is because they're metal. They've went over to metal because the thatch has gotten expensive due to apparently something to do with the government. I don't know what they're using the thatch for, but they're not able to use it. But as you can imagine, with a metal roof, what happens? It gets hot. That thatch would actually absorb some of that heat. So, you know, there's a pro to this with the metal roofs. They last longer than the thatch. The thatch, about every 5 years, they'd have to change them out. Now they last a little longer than that, of course. But this was as the drive up to Ochuna. Ochuna, I'll give you a little bit of a geography lesson here. Kenya is south of the equator, and you're going to be south of the Horn. Somalia is to the north. You have Uganda to the west, and you have then Tanzania to the south. Nairobi is going to be south central of the nation of Kenya, and then Migori, where we kind of were based out of. Migori is far west, kind of. It's far west, and it is hot and humid. Ochuna is going to be northwest of Migori. So that kind of just gives you, I wish I had a map. I should have made a map. That way you had a little bit of an idea. This was us driving up into where we would have services. This is actually one of the members, his land, Charles Moggy. His land and his family lives on this, I guess you could say, plot of land. I wouldn't call it a compound, but it's a plot of land. But most of the family lives right in that area. Not all of them go to church. I found that out, and I'll explain here in a little bit. But here, this was the only picture that I was able to get of the congregation, but you'll also be able to see the church hall. It's a tent, and there's not much left of the tent. I believe this is half of the original tent. It's just been destroyed. But the church, through your generosity of tithes and offerings, of course, Kagwa is in the process of starting a church building, a church hall there on Charles Moggy's property. That is Charles Moggy right there behind the podium. I'll go forward. You can hear a little bit of their music. Nope, I guess not. Try it again. I had it embedded. And nothing, but that's okay. You didn't need to hear it, I guess. So whenever I panned around and you're able to see the entirety of the congregation, but that's okay, maybe some other time. This right here, this is the family kitchen. That is the family kitchen. And it is made out of mud, as you can see. It's a mud hut with a thatch roof. That is very common, I found. Tim Waddle is actually inside the kitchen. I guess he was checking on what they were making. But we had a wonderful service with the people in Ochuna. We had a Sabbath service there, and then we were able to visit with them for a little while, and then we headed off to Magori, back to Magori. Those were the closest in proximity, so we made a circuit that day. We ran up, of course, to Ochuna early in the morning and then made it back for a Bible study in Magori that afternoon. So this is the road in Magori going towards the member's property where the church building that we rent, the facility, is at. They actually rent a school that is our school room that is behind their house. But this is the road going to the house. As you see, and I'll mention a little later, the trash, it is everywhere. The trash is just everywhere. It's piled up on the sides of the streets, things of that nature. Magori is the, Kenya is broke up in counties, and they have, Magori is a county. And then the biggest city within the Magori County is Magori itself. Within Magori County, I believe there's about 918,000 people within Magori County. Many of them live in Magori. So this is, we're getting very close. We had some traffic jam, as you can see. But that's very common. They're herding their cattle. I really don't know where they graze. I've seen a lot of them grazing on the trash, and that's kind of gross. This is the congregation in Magori. It's a very small schoolroom, but that would be pretty much all the members there. If you notice, that primarily all the men are on one side and all the ladies are on another? That is a culture thing, and we're in the process. I know Tim's been working on it for some time, but the process of explaining. Because of that very thing, marriage culture is quite different over there. That's kind of a stumbling block for them, and we're going to be, working with them, continually working with them. The woman, unfortunately, sometimes is looked at as she's to make babies and or to have babies and to make dinner and take care of the family. She's much more than that. God created us. He created us to have the same potential. We're as a team, we're a unit. And so we're going to be explaining that and try to break that down for them maybe a little more. And we're trying to get them to integrate their families, to sit together as a family instead of separating men and women. So anyway, it's one of those things that we'll have to work on for sure. Those are the two congregations in Ochuna and Magori. And they're about 2 hours apart. So it's not too bad. 2 hours. I say 2 hours. Kilometers is not that far. If we were to hop in a car here and drive, it'd probably take us 15 minutes. The roads are not great. As a matter of fact, you could get stuck in a pothole. And I'm not kidding. You probably lose a car in a pothole. But we had a four-wheel drive this time. I guess Tim hasn't had one. This was his first time to use it. I was going to be with him, so I guess he thought I was bringing a lot of luggage. but I about as much as he did. But it was nice. We actually were able to go faster and be able to get to where we're going. So he was excited about that. Around noon on Sunday, on September 1st, the four leaders from all three congregations, they came to the Maranatha Faith Assemblies. That's there in Magori. That's where our hub, kind of where we worked out of. They came to the Maranatha for 3 days of leadership classes. I'll introduce these four to you. The one on the far right, that is Charles Maggi. He is from Ochuna. He's the leader there in Ochuna. The one to his left, that is going to be Japheth Jagero. He is the deacon in Magori. And then to his left, that is a young man named David Paul. David Paul and the man to his left, Isaac Inda, they're related. They both are from Gakachola. Isaac is actually David's uncle. They're about six months apart. So that would be David's mother is Isaac's sister. So anyhow, the classes went very well. The classes that we gave were a continuation of the ILP. Everybody's been hearing about the International Leadership Program. This was the continuation of that, and it was very good. It was very well received by them, and I'll go into that here in just a second. But three of the four here, you have Charles, Japheth, and Isaac. They all had the opportunity to go to Rwanda for the International Leadership Program, which was quite interesting, especially since none of them, David Paul was going to go, but he was not able to get his passport in time. It got delayed and he wasn't able to go, which was a letdown, of course, for him. But none of these guys have been out of Kenya, let alone hardly their areas, okay? So you can only imagine the conversations that we had. They were so excited. They told me time and again, they talked about it and talked about it, their trip to Rwanda. They flew for the very first time in their life. And they rode an escalator. I wish I had that one of these days. I'll get it from Tim. He had a video of it. Rode an escalator for the very first time in their life, and that was funny to watch. Isaac, I'm going to tell on him. Hopefully he's not watching the webcast, but he went to get on it, had his backpack on, and he kind of looks at it and then gets on it and like riding this thing like a horse. It was funny. But you can only imagine the excitement they had as they were able to do this for the first time. And then, of course, the airline flight over to Rwanda. It's only about a little over an hour and 15 minutes or so, but they couldn't talk more about it. It was so much fun. And, you know, I actually had one of the men, they said, "Now, Mr. Nathan," they said, "now, Mr. Tim, he took us on an airplane. What are you going to do?" Okay. We'll see. But all the meetings went very well. While there, we made the men talk in English only. Only English. Now, the native language of Kenya is Swahili. Second language is English. So many people in Kenya know English. Now, over here on the western side, it's very tribal. And with that, they don't really speak Swahili. Some of them know how to speak some Swahili. But they've stuck to their native tongue. And so it's Lao over there. And so here they are. They're speaking Lao. They do know some English. It's hard to understand them sometimes, make them say it two or three times, but we made them speak only in English. They would get started talking, and then they want to talk fast, and they go right back to their native tongue, Lao. We might, nope, English only. Even talking amongst themselves, English only. And so the entire time they were there, we made them do that, and it was quite interesting. At first, it was kind of rough for them. They got a little frustrated from time to time, but by the end, that's all they were speaking in. They're speaking in English. And would you be surprised after the 3 days how much better we could understand them? But it was very interesting. We have to be careful what we say because sometimes they don't understand our idioms. You know, we have a lot of idioms we use. And when you say them, I remember Tim looking at me, they don't understand what that is. Like, beat around the bush. I'm not going to beat around the bush. The bush to them is not a bush. It's bush, you know. It's a place, and you're beating around the bush. don't quite understand that, you know, or we were talking about marriage and things like that. I said, it takes two to tango. You can see it in their eyes. It's like, they don't know what I said. And I was like, I don't want to explain that. So I'm going to go on. But or, like, for instance, it costs an arm and a leg. I look at you. Oh, really? It doesn't cost an arm and a leg. That's just a figure of speech. Okay, a figure of speech. That is, no, anyway. So you have to explain those items as well. So you do have to be careful. Thursday was the day. Well, here, I'll give you another picture of them. That was the last day. That was before we were getting ready to head out. Actually, you know, they don't have much. They don't. And, you know, one of them mentioned to us, he says, why can't we stay the whole time with you guys? And, well, you got to go back. You're with us 3 days. We've got other things that we need to do. And he says, well, this is living. And really, the Maranatha is not living. It is, you know, for many, it would be surviving. But at the same time, they had a bathroom there, able to use a restroom. They don't have bathrooms. If anything, they have pit latrines. They don't have running water. They don't have electricity. They don't have a bed. They might have a small, thin mattress, but that's about it. So, but they thought that was very wonderful. Thursday, we were able to spend some time and go to the Masamara. The Masamara is a reserve. I wrote about it a little bit in my Sabbath note. And it is 583 square miles. That's very large. It's on the south, and it borders Tanzania. Well, to put it in perspective, it borders right there with the Serengeti. So the Mara runs into the Serengeti. The Serengeti is 12,000 square miles. Very large. So a very large savanna, and it connects, as I said, into the Serengeti of Tanzania. And this was we were driving down into the Masamara. That is the way it looks as far as you can see. It's beautiful. Those dots down in there, those are all acacia trees. They're peppered with them all over the savannah. You're able to see many things as you're driving in. It says, wild animals can be extremely dangerous. Only leave your vehicle at designated points. Okay, no problem. I don't have an issue with that. I think I'll take heed to what was said there because, well, there are lions roaming about and things like that. I know that they had a flat tire at one time in this area, not in the Masamara, but they had a flat tire, and Tim said Paul, who's our driver, who's been driving for him for quite some time, was out changing the tire and out peeking and watching were some lions. And Tim got back in the car, so poor Paul. He made it. He's still our driver. But there's many, many different things that you're able to see there. He's playing hide and seek with me. Didn't see him, not at all. But there's just many different animals. We're able to experience all that. Plenty of zebras, for sure. More zebras than anything. Right at that particular point was with the wildebeest. We're in the process of migrating. So there's thousands and thousands and thousands of wildebeest. They're migrating back into the Serengeti. Got pictures. These two were sharpening their tusks on the tree, and then they turned around to give us a picture. I think they're actually, you know, kind of playing around with each other as well. That's crocodile. Crocodiles there, they're huge. About 20 feet long, I'm going to say this one was. Pretty good size. Wouldn't want to meet that while you're swimming, that's for sure. Right here, okay, so we had an opportunity. Like I said, we had a four-wheel drive. We didn't have to rent a guide or a vehicle. We had Paul with us. He knows the area, and we had a four-wheel drive. And so we went where we wanted to go. And I think we went a couple places we weren't supposed to go. And one of them was here. The only other person out there was us and the herd of elephants. And then all of a sudden, we're watching these elephants, and I'm starting to kind of get a little nervous because you have the elder elephant behind us, and you have the herd in front of us, and I'm thinking, I've heard that they watch. And Paul's like, yes, they watch, and they keep track of anything, you know, bothers the herd, they take care of it. I'm like, we're in a car. And so anyway, he was very kind. If they start stomping their feet and waving their ears, flapping their ears, you better be, you know, kind of get excited. Well, that happened. The conservationist pulled up beside us, like, what are you doing? We're out here watching the elephants. And he's like, well, you know, pretty much be careful. And they took off, so we followed them. And we were following them, and they stopped because this mama elephant stops. And she stopped actually in front of them, turned around and just stopped and stared them down. And I thought, oh, this is not going to be good. Glad that's them and not us. And, well, anyway, they sat there for the longest time. Finally, she moved along the side, and as you can see, she's not too happy. I actually posted this one on Instagram, and I said, I wonder who's going to flinch first. So anyway, she finally went back to the herd, and this is the herd that we were right behind. That's how close we were to these elephants. As you can see, there's a road over there. That's where we were supposed to be. There's a small river that runs through. We couldn't get back over there, so we had to go on out. But it was very interesting. We were the only ones out there, so that was quite neat. These are hyenas. Was able to have those come back here, and the video's not working. Anyway, there was more than, there we go. Well, nope, it's not working. Anyway, there were two of them right outside my window of the car. And that's how close we were. That right there, that's wildebeests. That's just one small picture of, I should have taken a panoramic, but I had to zoom in to even get it because I couldn't get close enough. But a lot of wildebeests out there. It's spectacular. We wanted to be able to catch them crossing the Mara River, but we never could make it to a point to where they were crossing. Have you ever heard of the crossing, the Mara crossing? That happens right where we were at. That is a picture. It is a panoramic picture. We were able to go up to one of the hotels they have up there. They have a resort up there. And that is the view from up there, and that's what you see for miles. Very, very, very beautiful. It's very picturesque. You know, as we were driving around Africa, you could see the rich dirt when they would till it up, just black. You see they have all kinds of resources, gold, diamonds. You know, they're actually out, you know, mining for gold and things like that. Then you have beautiful creation. They have a lot. They have oil, but a very wealthy nation without any wealth. So anyhow, unfortunately, that's the way it goes. Then Friday afternoon, we spent going over things with the Maranatha for the upcoming Feast of Tabernacles, and then, of course, getting ready for the Sabbath. But that was after lunch. Before lunch, I left early that morning, and I went out by myself with Paul, the driver. Not by myself, but by myself. Tim was not with me. I cut the umbilical cord. So that was actually fun. I was able to go out and had the opportunity to visit the village that we were going to go to on the Sabbath, Gotcachola. And I was able to go there because I had to check out the installation of a solar panel and all the equipment that goes along with that, your inverters and a transformer and all of that, and along with the battery and all that has to be hooked up correctly. Otherwise, you could have a nice fire, very nice fire, or short everything out. The church has provided the men over there with laptops and cell phones, and this particular individual had a small solar panel that went out, and it had it was no longer any good, so we had picked all that up Wednesday afternoon and sent it off with him back home. I gave him a rundown of how to hook it all up, and Tim was like, we need to go out and make sure that it's all hooked up correctly. And it was. He did a great job. He had it all hooked up wonderfully. And so I was able to go up there and check that out. And I also checked out the church building that they're building just to see exactly what all was needed that's left to be done on it. I'm going to say approximately 70% done, 75% done. They meet in it right now, but it needs quite a bit yet to have accomplished. This was driving into Gotcachola. Very beautiful. That is Lake Victoria. Lake Victoria is the largest lake in Africa. Very, very beautiful lake. I don't know if I drink the water out of it, but it is a very beautiful lake. They fish out of it. For little Gotcachola, the little fishing village, that is what makes that little village. That is the income of this village. But I had to stop and take a picture of that. That is not too far away from Isaac Enda's house. This is the church hall that the church is in the process of finishing up. You know, for Kenyan standards, very good. Very well built for Kenyan standards. It would not pass muster in the States, of course, but you know, we don't have to worry about that. And it is brick. That way it'll last for quite some time. I'll give you all the sides. That's the entrance right there. As you notice, there are gutters on at least half of it. We're getting ready, I believe, to have gutters put on all of it. And there's a reason for that, and I'll show you here in a second. As you can see, there's none there. And then there's the back side of it. The reason being is, you see that right there? That is a water tank. That's a water holder. Holds about 5,000 liters. And it takes and collects, the gutters collect the rainwater and then transfer it off into the container. They haven't had a lot of rain over there right now. And you can see why we want to put gutters all the way around to be able to catch all the rainwater. Because the water in that area, I mean, they have to go a long ways to be able to get water, potable water, well, decent water, I guess you could say. It's really not decent. It's muddy. It's dirty. The church has put one of these containers in each one of the congregations, each one of the cities of the congregations. There's one in Magori, there's one in Gacachola here, and then one in Ochuna. And so it's there for the members to be able to use to have clean drinking water. And rainwater is fairly clean. They have them treat it, which helps out a lot. While there, I was able to take a walk down by the lake. They let me go down into the village. I was able to walk the lake. It's very pretty. Those are their fishing boats. That's what they fish out of. They fish with nets primarily. There are nets everywhere. Many different people, I didn't get a picture of this, but there's many different people spreading the nets out, getting them ready to take back out, and taking the fish back up to the market area. It was interesting, as I was walking the shoreline, Isaac's like waving at people. And I said, well, who's that? He goes, oh, that's one of the members of the church. So I got to meet two or three members while I was down there. They live right down there by the water. This is Isaac's wife, Jacqueline, to the left. That is Isaac in the middle. David Paul to the right. And guess who that is right down there at the bottom? That is Valerie Waddle. I'm not joking. It is Valerie Waddle. That is her name. Her name is Valerie Waddle. I believe there's some Tim Waddles running around as well. And I was told before I left that somebody was going to name their son Nathan Willoughby. Please don't name your son Nathan Willoughby. We don't need any more Nathan Willoughbys running around, that is for sure. But I was able to go back, like I said, and take care of things for the Feast of Tabernacles and preparing for the Sabbath. And then we went back to Gacachola. This is inside the building. As you can see, there's still a lot of things yet to be done. But they are doing better. They're sitting as families in Gacachola. And that's great. As you notice, the podium is off to the left. There's a reason for that. In the top, the way that the builder built it, he didn't get the metal put on the roof properly. And he's made a nice little inlet for bats. On top of the roof, they have purlins. And the purlins make a nice V at the ridge. And so all those bats have been able to hang out, if you will, up there. And they also drop things from up there. As a matter of fact, it wasn't moved over far enough, and Tim got it on top of the head. So he moved it a little further. So anyway, those are the members. There was the new member that decided to join us for services. You can see the chicken right there in the middle. I have a video of that one as well. Okay, we don't. So anyway, during services, while we were in the middle of services, three chickens go trouncing through the middle and kind of look around and then jump out the door off the side. Then one jumps back in and then starts to go over to and check out one of the children that are laying on the ground. And somebody else ran up and shooed it out, and it came back in and thought it'd join us. So we had the opportunity to have blessing of the little children while we were there. We got to bless three little children. It was nice to be able to do that. This one did not like my hands on her head at all. She let me know that as well. But it was very, very fun. Very, very, very good day. Then this was our send-off party. They were all standing on a rock by the car, waving goodbye to us. So that it was. It ended a very, very enjoyable time to be able to spend with all of the brethren. That was our last, of course, Sabbath. We headed out the very next day to come home. While on my way home, though, I had plenty of time to think. On long flights, you have plenty of time to think. And I was thinking about my takeaways of my first visit to Kenya and, of course, Africa as a whole. And, you know, as I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, the nation of Kenya as a whole is living in poverty. The majority is they're living in poverty. Sanitation's not a thing. Maybe in some areas, with exception of the tourist areas, of course, like for instance in Nairobi and of course in the game reserve areas, those have proper sanitation. And because they're clientele, they've got clientele and they have to take care of that clientele. And their clientele is primarily Westerners. So they have very clean facilities. Their bathrooms are clean, they have bathrooms, they have proper sanitation. They take great care to not have any water and food contamination. They make sure of that because I was able to eat salad. They tell you that's a no-no when you go over to Africa, but I was able to eat salad in Nairobi at the Four Point Sheraton. I would not eat it anywhere else. I can guarantee you that. Had no issue with that, but they don't want that because they wouldn't want their visitors, the Westerners, to, my eyes have to adjust. Where was I at? Oh, yes, they wouldn't want the Westerners to, you know, get sick, because you know what Westerners do. They post it to Facebook. They post it to social media. They hand out I know what the word is. I use them all the time. Look at them. Yeah, well, anyway, it'll come to me here in a little bit. But reviews, wow, that's a hard word. Anyway, they have different reviews, you know, all the time, and you wouldn't want them to get sick and spread the word, because it would shut down the industry, of course, the tourism industry. But trash is everywhere, especially in the rural cities, the rural areas, and in the cities and villages. There are certain areas that it's cleaner. It is cleaner. Like, for instance, Gakachola was a little cleaner than many of the others. I will say this, the members' homes around their property, they have some of them have quite a bit of property. I believe Isaac has about 20 acres or so, and it's clean. I didn't see a stitch of trash on it. So they're very good about doing that. But in most, everywhere else, that's all you see. When you're running down the road, just trash everywhere. And you know what happens with trash. You have disease and things like that. That all comes from it. And the cows, as I said, they graze on the trash. I've seen them in the middle of a trash heap eating. Not cool. Witchcraft and voodoo, they're quite rampant. In Kenya and, of course, Africa as a whole, but there's an attitude amongst the people. The attitude of take it while you can. If it's there, nobody's around, take it. Because for some reason, I guess they left it, they didn't want it anymore. So they take it. The attitude to take care of yourself before anyone else is very obvious. No concern but for themselves, that is very obvious. What can I get? What can I take? Every man and woman for themselves. Lawlessness abounds. I have a video. We don't have time to show it right now. I may just run it afterwards. It's only about 3.5 minutes, but it was about a 7-minute video. All it is a video of going down the streets in Migori. That's it. And it's chaos going down the streets in Migori. It is chaos. It is, like I said, lawlessness abounds, and Satan is very busy in that nation as a whole. And you can tell that, not just Kenya, but Africa as a whole. Now, he's very busy in the entire world, but it seems like even more so over there. I mean, I've heard some say that it must be easier for the brethren in these developing nations to have a relationship with God, since they don't have so many distractions. You know, so if they don't have so many distractions physically, they're able to spend more time with study, prayer, fasting, things of that nature, meditation. Because the physical things aren't important. Because why? They don't have any physical things. Well, I can honestly say that is not the case. It is not the case. They are concerned about many physical things, just like we are, but we're concerned about things maybe in a little bit different manner, not things that we're normally concerned with. They have many things that are obstacles to them, roadblocks, if you will, in their spiritual life. Their trudge through this life isn't easy. It isn't any easier than ours. We battle the same forces, just in a different manner sometimes. But we do. We battle those same forces. And if anything, my feeling is that it's maybe more difficult for them. It may be more difficult. Day after day, for some, they struggle to have enough food to eat. They worry about having food. Clean water is not readily accessible. And that's why I said, the church has put in those 3 containers. You know what I thought was great before we left? The church paid to have those containers filled. 5,000 liters in each one, because all 3 of them were down to nothing. But all 3 of them were filled. And, you know, there's no electricity, only for the uber wealthy. If there's government officials somewhere, apparently there's one moving into Gacachola and having something built because they're running power. You can see these concrete poles laying down. They're getting ready to run power through Gacachola. And the only place it's going to this government official's home. Nobody out there has power, very, very few at all. But I will say this, we're hopeful because we're wiring the church. We're going to have it wired for electricity, so if we have the opportunity that we can hook up, we'll be able to hook up. But and then they have to worry about disease. Malaria is rampant over there. And you can tell by a lot of the members, the sclera of their eye is yellow just because they've had malaria so many times. And as you know, the malaria will go and find the liver first, and then it disperses from there. And it's not good. It can actually be fatal, for sure. And there are all other kinds of diseases that can be spread easily. And then there's the culture that we even touched on it a little while ago. The marriage culture. That's totally different than America, of course. And they have to fight those things daily. Then, of course, the spiritual cultures. We talked about that. You know, there's voodoo and things of that nature. Witchcraft, it's very rampant. So after arriving home, I walked into our house, and I thought, wow, this is nice. It's really nice, because God's people from Kenya, I don't believe, would know how to act or react if they stayed at home in any of our homes, stayed a night in any of our homes. They wouldn't. They'd be beside themselves. They wouldn't know what to do. You know, most of their homes are mud huts, 16 by 16. That's about it. Two rooms. They have a living room, and they have a bedroom. That's it. That's all they have. Small family, all the family sleeps in that room. As they grow, they'll build another hut, if they're able to. And the huts, they get attacked by termites because they run bamboo in there for the support. And you know what? Termites do in mud, they'll burrow through mud, and then they find the bamboo. And you know what happens after that? Down it goes. So they have to be very careful of that. You know, I have taken for granted whenever I can just go into a room and flip a switch. I want light, I flip the switch. I want water, I don't worry about it. I go to the fridge to get water, or I go to the faucet. And if I'm washing my hands or doing whatever, I turn it to hot. Taking a shower, I don't have to go out in a stream and bathe in muddy water. I get to go and shower in a nice clean shower. And if I want it warm in the house, I turn on the heat. If I want it cool in the house, I turn down the thermostat. You know, and if I want to cook something, I just go turn on the stove. They have to build a fire. That was their kitchen. They have a fire hut in there. And in that hut, they have a little fire stove that they cook in. I'm not saying any of that to make any of you feel bad. I'm just telling you what they have. And sometimes what we take for granted. And we do. I feel like we do take it for granted. We as a nation have been blessed with the blessings of Abraham. And we are the receivers of that. They are not. But we are. They are the receivers of those physical blessings. And I feel that, like I said, I feel like sometimes we take them for granted. I know after visiting Africa and thinking about it, I know that I do take them for granted. But with the brethren of these three congregations, I noticed something very profound. That's, as I was, like I said, I thought a lot, but I noticed something very profound. And this is what I noticed, and this is what was talked about. The coming kingdom of God is very important to them, and it is on their minds. They talk about it a lot. Even though they have different family issues that they have to learn, marriage things, you know, to be able to know exactly what God expects of them, family is important to them. Family is very important to them. And their spiritual family is very important to them. It's very obvious, very important. And they look forward every week to being at Sabbath services. That is a highlight. You know, and before, I noticed this before in some places, even after services, they sing hymns together. I found that quite interesting. I was walked into the church hall in Ochuna, and they were all singing. Well, service has already started. No, we had another 30 minutes to go. They were just singing. And they had one of the teens up there leading hymns. It was really good. I truly thought that many of them were just family members. They were running in and out of each other's houses and in and out of the little kitchen there. And so I asked Charles and Achuna, I said, well, how many of these, most of these, your family? He goes, no, they're mostly members. Oh. He goes, one lives about a mile over here, another one a couple miles over there. They just were like family. And that was wonderful to see. And it was the same in all three congregations. Maybe a little bit different, but still the same. And not one area did I see any cliques. Did I see any type of factions? None of them. And in the 3 days I was with the men, I didn't hear negative talk at all about other people. No negative talk about other people. And the thing is, we talked a lot. We sat, ate dinner together. We ate lunch together. They call it supper. We ate supper together. We ate lunch together. We ate breakfast together. We just talked together. And not once did I hear any negative talk. Are they perfect? Absolutely not. They are not. They have many things that they're striving to overcome just like us. They are to live by the same standards that we are to. God's standards. They're not different from country to country. They're not different if you're poor. They're not different if you're rich. They are the same. They are God's standards. God's standards are the same no matter where we are located on this earth. You know, there may be cultural things that they have to overcome, and they do. But you know what? God's way of life, His law, His standards require them to do that. To overcome, to become like Him. Just like us, we have cultural things that we have to overcome as well. All of us have to do and obey God as He asks. In thinking about this, my mind kept going back to their focus on the kingdom, the Sabbath, and each other. And so then this brought to mind a passage that I'd been thinking about. And we've touched on it many times. I don't know if with me, but I imagine as a whole, we've touched on it many times. And that is in Hebrews 10. Go ahead and turn to Hebrews 10. Hopefully I can finish this up in about 30 minutes here. Hebrews 10. Oh, we've got plenty of time. Hebrews 10, verse 24. Actually, let's start in verse 19. Hebrews 10, verse 19. If you want a title for today's message, I guess it would just be African Musings, because that's what I was doing, was thinking over these things. Within this passage, though, as we read it, in the last two verses that we'll read, there's three questions that can be asked. And we'll ask those, and we'll go over those. But in Hebrews 10, verse 19, it says, therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Jesus. And the thing is, we, Jesus Christ, died for us all. Our fellow family members in Kenya, us, and the rest of our brethren. Because he says, therefore, brethren. He says, by a new and living way which he consecrated, he dedicated, he initiated for us through the veil, that is his flesh, and having a high priest over the house of God. Let us draw near, it says, with a true heart. In full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. We have the same hope. We've been given the same hope. We serve the same God. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more, so much the more, as you see, it says, the day approaching. As I said, there are three questions that can be asked in verses 24 and 25. And I want to ask them in reverse of how they were stated. Number one is this: what is important to us as we see the day approaching? What is important to us as we see the day approaching? Number two: do we forsake the assembling of ourselves together? And number three: do we consider one another? And I'll go back over these here in just a little bit. Let's look at question number one. What is important to us as we see the day approaching? What is important to us as we see the day approaching? I'd like for you to stop a minute and think about this. What is on your mind when you wake up in the morning? What is on your mind? What do you think about? What do you ponder the most during the day? What's in your mind when you go to bed at night? What takes up most of the space in your thoughts. Let's go to Proverbs 23 real quick. We're just going to read one passage here. Proverbs 23. Proverbs 23, and we'll read. I wanted to start in verse 4, but we're running short on time. We'll just read verse 7. Actually, verse 23. Where am I at? Proverbs 23. I'm in Psalm. No wonder. I was like, man, that does not look right. Proverbs 23, and we'll start in verse 7. We'll read only verse 7. We're going to read the first half of verse 7. It says, "For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he." We become what we think about inwardly. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We know that. We've talked about that. Matthew 6, this is a very well-known passage, but I think we stop too many times in this one area. Matthew 6. Man, I can't get the words out today. Matthew 6, verse 19. Matthew 6, verse 19. This is Jesus Christ speaking here. He says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." We've read that many times. Let's keep going. "The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good," it is clear, it is healthy, it is not divided in heart or mind, it says your whole body will be full of light. There's a distinction here. He says, but if your eye is bad, evil or unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. There's a contrast here. He says, "If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" In other words, if there is any darkness, in other words, you can't have it both ways. Desire my way or not my way. If there is any darkness, you're in darkness, he says. Verse 24, keep going. "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve," it says, "God and mammon." Again, what is important to you? What is important to me? What is most important in our lives? Are our careers? Or maybe a quest for the finer things of life? There's nothing wrong with that. Not at all. Don't get me wrong. But it does matter how it takes preference in our lives. Remember the rich young ruler that's asked Jesus Christ? He says, "What must I do to have eternal life?" Listen, Matthew 19. Jesus Christ, he told him, he said, "Well, keep the commandments." He says, "Which ones?" And he went through and named the commandments. And then he says, "Well, I've kept those from my youth." Jesus Christ said, "Well," knowing that he was wealthy, he said, "Go sell all that you have, give to the poor, and come and follow me." And you know what happened. He didn't, because he had great wealth. That's what was important to him. Luke 16. Luke 16, verse 10. It says, "He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much." He says, "And he who is unjust in what is least is also unjust and also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon," the things of this life, to be able to put it into perspective, I guess, to utilize it properly. And he says, "Who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and be loyal to the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." You notice here it mentions a servant. And back in Matthew 6, it said that no one can serve two masters. You can be a servant to the wrong thing. We see, it does matter what we serve and why. All servants serve what is important to them. Have you thought about that? All servants serve what is important to them. What is important to us? For example, let's take serving at services, or let's just say the feast, the upcoming feast, or in other ways. Why do we serve? Why do we serve? Stop and ask yourself that. And while you're serving, stop and think what you're thinking. Meditate on your thoughts. What are our thoughts on, and what are they about when we do serve? Do we ever serve with mixed intentions in the back of our mind? Do we ever serve all while desiring something for ourselves? Do we ever serve that way? Maybe for recognition, maybe for position, or whatever may be the case. If any of that is the case, we are not serving God, nor the brethren, we are serving ourselves. We are serving no one but ourselves. This is what Jesus Christ is talking about in Matthew 6 and Luke 16. What we serve and how and why we serve is revealing of what is important to us. Where our treasure is, there our heart will be also. You know, with the gentleman in Africa, we explained how Jesus Christ came as a servant. We explained that to them. And he never served himself. Never served himself. He only came to serve us and all humanity. We were that important to him. We still are that important to him. He gave up his life for us to have the opportunity to be the eternal members that we have talked about in the family of God. Whatever is important to you is what you will serve. People can give you pointers. I can give you pointers. But we cannot control what or whom you serve. You cannot control whom I serve. What is important to you? Number two, do we forsake the assembling of ourselves together? This is a big one. Here we're told that we are to be, in this particular passage of Hebrews 10, to be together every Sabbath, as long as we're able to be. I know things happen. And, you know, there's good reason for it. And God understands that. And we're also supposed to be here on the holy days. God has commanded those assemblies. We're to be together. Do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Because we are not to forsake that time together worshiping God. Worshiping God and spending time with each other. The word forsake in the Greek is enkatalapo. Enkatalapo, and it means to leave behind or desert. To leave behind or desert. We're not to leave behind or desert the Sabbath commands. God tells us to turn away our foot from the Sabbath. Back in Isaiah 58:13, he says, turn away your foot from the Sabbath. In other words, from doing your own things. God created this day for man, not man for the Sabbath. You know, he has commanded us to appear before him, to worship him each week and on his holy days. And when we do, he instructs us in his way of life. And you know what? It's together as a family. Yes, individually, but also together. The Sabbath allows us to draw near to God, and it's a time to reflect on all that he has, is, and will continue to do. These times help us to see more clearly what should be of more importance to us. They should. Did you know that the way in which we treat and keep God's Sabbath, the way that we treat and keep God's Sabbath reveals our zeal and desire for his kingdom? I'll add Sabbaths. The way that we keep his Sabbaths. You know, how excited do we get about the Sabbath each week? How excited? Well, let me ask this. How excited do you get about going to the feast? Pretty excited? We're to be that excited each and every week when we come to Sabbath services. We should be excited that we have the opportunity to come before the great eternal of the universe to praise him and to worship him. We should also be excited to get together with those of like mind, especially after a week of dealing with junk, the junk of society and its thinking. You know, the Sabbath is a time of refreshing, a time of rejuvenation. That's why in Hebrews 3 and 4, it talks about it being a rest. See this, when we come to Sabbath services, we are reflecting on the rest that is to come. That's why there's still a Sabbath rest for the people of God, for us to reflect on that rest that is going to be eternal. And then the rest that mankind will receive, a break, of course, from Satan. That rest. That's what we picture when we're here. That's what we're going over. We're to be talking about spiritual things. Okay, I'll ask this. When was the last time, and you don't have to answer it, when was this answered in your own mind? I don't know what's talked about all the time, but how many times, when was the last time that we talked about spiritual things while at services? It is a time of iron sharpening iron. The Sabbath is not like any other day. It is different, and we're not to be doing our own pleasures on it. When we leave behind or desert God's Sabbath for other things, it shows God very clearly what is most important to us. When we do forsake coming to services, guess what? We start to become weak. See, just like those animals that I showed you and I saw within the Mara, all of them run in herds, packs, and pods. They don't run in pods, they swim in pods. But that's what they're in. And those who stay together is within that pack, that herd, and that pod, they have strength. Strength in numbers. God tells us that. You can go back to Ecclesiastes 4, and you see that. He says, if you're by yourself and you fall into a pit, who's going to help you out? If there's one, and there's someone, I guess, that's overtaking you, well, with two, in other words, you can overtake them. He was just saying a three-cord is not easily broken. Strength in numbers. You know, when an animal's out on the fringes by itself, it makes it really easy for the enemy to pick them off. That's exactly what Satan wants, is to get out on the fringes. And whenever we forsake the assembling of ourselves together, we get out on the fringes. And it makes it so much easier for our enemy to pick us off. Peter described our enemy, Satan, as a roaring lion. We know that, 1 Peter 5:8, that he is as a roaring lion, walking about, seeking whom he may devour. If we continue to forsake coming together to worship and learn from God, we will become weak. We will become weak. God knew, God gave us each other to help encourage and help strengthen one another through His Spirit. God knew that we are going to need to be refreshed each week, and He knew that we are going to need, if you will, recalibration of our minds and focus. And He knew that we are going to need the interaction of those with like mind. This is why He said, do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Lastly, number three, do we consider one another? Do we consider one another? In Hebrews 10:24, it goes on after it says, consider one another. In what? In order to stir up love and good works. The word consider in the Greek is katateneo, K-A-T-A-N-O-E-O. And it means to consider attentively, fix one's eyes or mind upon, to understand. To consider attentively, fix one's eyes or mind upon, to understand. We are to have concern for one another. We are to consider attentively and understand that we each have a story. We've all been called from different backgrounds. You may not know mine fully. I may not know yours fully. You may not know each other's fully. We must understand that. We must understand each other. We have differing backgrounds, but yet we are family. We are members together of what? The family of God. Let's go to Ephesians 2. Ephesians 2. Ephesians 2, verse 14. Ephesians 2, verse 14, for He Himself is my peace? No, He says, for He Himself is our peace, who has made both one and has broken down the middle wall of separation for us, having abolished in His flesh the enmity, that is, the law, commandments contained in ordinances, so as to create in Himself one new man from the two, thus making peace, and that He might reconcile them both to God in one body through the cross, thereby putting to death the enmity, the hostility, the hatred. And He came and preached peace to you who were afar off and to those who were near. For through Him, we both have access. We have access to the same God through the same Spirit. We have by one Spirit to the Father. Now, therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners. And that's what we came from, differing backgrounds. He says, but now fellow citizens. You are fellow citizens with the saints. And it says, and members. Members together of the household of God. Having been built on the foundation of the prophets, the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ Himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together grows into a holy temple in the Lord. All of us, it says, grow into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together We are being built together for a dwelling place of God, it says in the Spirit. We are being built together. We have a common calling. Each of us that sit in this room today have been called or are being called. There is a common Spirit, the Spirit of God, that is either working with us or in us. Do we treat each other that way? Do we treat each other that way? Do we look at everyone in this room as a fellow family member or a potential family member of God? Someone that we're going to work beside or have the opportunity to work beside in the future to come? Or are there factions and cliques among us? In 1 Corinthians 11, verse 18, Paul told the church in Corinth, "For first of all, when you come together as a church," what is the church? It's a body. It's the body of Christ. "When you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you, and in part, I believe it." I agree. In part, I believe it. I feel the same way. I feel that many times we put on a face but have differing thoughts about each other. This shouldn't be. How many negative things have there been said about others that you've heard? How many negative things have we or you said about others that sit in this room? How in the world are we going to be able to stir up love and good works if we don't show either towards one another? Well, simply, it won't happen. Too many times we pit ourselves against others due to our own perception of reality. And that's what it is, our own perception of reality. And Satan runs with that. He does. We assume the worst of others, but yet we expect, or should I say demand, that others assume the best of us. Is there any place for that in the body of Christ? I will say absolutely not. There is no place for that in the church, just as there will be no place for that in the kingdom of God. To consider one another is to put others before ourselves. It is to serve others and treat them, even if they may not treat us right, as we would want to be treated. Jesus Christ told us, he gave us the golden rule, that's what we tagged it. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, it is to give of ourselves without regard of being given anything back in return. It is loaning and helping without regard of repayment. To consider one another is to take time. Time is valuable. It's to take time to get to know each other. It is to share our home, our food, our time with each other. We are going to be eternal family members. Eternal family members in the kingdom of God, serving alongside each other and Jesus Christ. How are we going to teach these things if we can't do them today? We must be living what we will be teaching in the millennium. If we are not living what we are going to be teaching in the millennium, unfortunately, we won't be there. Never should we have the attitude that so-and-so I have nothing in common with, so I'm going to ignore them. Or I'm not going to be able to get along with them, so I'm not going to have anything to do with them. That's utter nonsense. Absolute, utter nonsense. We are all part of the body of Christ. We are bound by the same Spirit. Ephesians 4. We're here in Ephesians 4, verse 11. "And he himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying, for the building up of the body of Christ." It starts with us. The ministry is our responsibility. And if it's because of us, then it's on our head. It says, "Till we all come to" what? "The unity of the faith." The unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to a complete, spiritually mature man, to the measure, it says, of the stature of the fullness of Christ, which is perfection. That is perfection. It says that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things, into who? The head, Jesus Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every, it says, joint supplies, all the way down to the joints, the smallest member, according to the effective working by which every part, and I have that underscored in my Bible, every part, not just a few of us, not just some of us, but all of us, does its share. And if we are all doing our share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself, it says, in love. Love comes. We are to be here for each other. We are to be attentive to each other's needs and should always be willing to help no matter what maybe we perceive of someone else. These three questions we have looked at, we must ponder and meditate upon. The days I spent in Africa brought about many thoughts, if you can't tell. And it showed me again and re-solidified that those of us who have been given so much, those of us who have been given so much, much is expected of us. Our fellow family members here and there, they need our prayers and support. So as it says in Hebrews 10, 24 and 25, consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting, encouraging, building up, loving one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching.